What's up, beautiful people, and welcome to Inside Out Empowerment, where we are examining the science of personal excellence through the very real experience of today's most powerful thinkers, professional athletes, and the world's greatest entrepreneurs. We learn the mechanisms for designing the life and the results of our dreams, starting from the inside out. I'm entrepreneur Joshua Nussbaum and your host. Just watch me now.
Benjamin Blevins.
How's it going, man?
Thank you for coming on the show. I'm fucking stoked to be doing this. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with Ben Blevins, Spartan Legacy on Instagram. Ben is a very, very good friend of mine and wildly inspiring person to me personally, and a very gentle giant. He looks like a mountain bodybuilder motherfucker that's has a lot figured out. He's the guy who actually got me big originally. You know, I got very into lifting, and for a long time I was hanging out around like the 190, 195 mark. You know, then I had cut and I was shredding really hard. I wanted the peels and I wanted the Instagram content, right? And I like had got down about to like 187, and then met Ben actually wandering the floor at Olympia 2015, maybe. Liz actually went up to him. It was like he was walking around with another pro bodybuilder guy. And you know, they had their shirts off, and their physiques are just fucking retarded. And she goes, "Hey, I heard you guys were interested in getting into health and fitness. Do you need any tips on lifting?" And you know, Liz, after talking to Ben for about 2 seconds, is like, "Dude, you got to come meet the owner. You guys are gonna fucking click beautifully." Tell me about our first conversation, Ben. I was gonna do it justice, but I feel like you might be able to remember some of the details that I didn't. I just remember being like immediately like, "Oh, you're sponsored by another company. Fuck them. You need to come on board and hook up with what we're doing and what we're up to, because you're way too fucking magical of a human to be with something and someone and a team that you're not passionate about." What was your experience of the first time we ever spoke?
You know, there's a few people in your life where you meet and it's just, there's no really words to describe it. You click so well. It's sometimes it's a black and white. Maybe you're not always thinking the same, but it's just this perfect mesh. And you know, I don't even remember the first words that me and you said, but it was just a sincere connection of this guy knows his shit. So yeah, man, we just immediately clicked. And I mean, we just discussed your goals of growing Rev Labs and my goals of really wanting a quality sponsor to be behind me and me behind them. And man, I mean, within 5 minutes, I mean, we just knew it was destiny to meet each other. So yeah, and even to this day, I mean, me and you just, man, you name it. We don't talk for 2 weeks sometimes or a month, and we're right back on the same page as soon as we connect again. I mean, that's just divine, just beauty with, you know, that's rare friendships that you really have to cherish in this life when you're goal-oriented, because how many friends, you know, out of dozens of people or hundreds of people that you interact with daily, you might have that one or two rock solid motivational friends, and that's really what our relationship has.
Amen. Yeah, I remember you were there. I think good friends are there to throttle and support you and tell you how awesome you are and also call you on your shit. I don't think either one of us have any problem doing either. I know you like refer to me when you introduce me as your mentor, and I'm like, dude, you're the one training me, bro. Like I think it's more synergistic than me mentoring you. But I remember you're like, I think we were there in, what was it, Arnold 2016, after that guy almost knocked me out for saying no offense after I said the word gay, or like, this, you know, like we were talking about like gay dudes, like taking pictures with us at the booth. And I'm like, dude, I'm not homophobic in the slightest bit. I have tons of gay friends. Like that's not even something that enters my mind when talking to someone. When you're taking pictures and they start like being touchy, it's like, I don't care if you're a girl or you're a gay guy or whatever, like be respectful of someone's space. You know what I mean? But every time I was saying the word gay, I kept looking at that dude. Remember, his wife was hitting on you hard as hell, drunk as shit at the bar, and like was like flirting. Wow, you're so big. Da, da, da. And the husband was standing there. And every time I was saying the word gay, I kept looking at him and being like, no offense, no offense. Remember that? Remember that in Ohio?
Yeah.
So I'm like saying, I'm talking shit and just teasing this guy. We're probably, if cross-eyed drunk at that point, back when I used to drink. I kept being like, you know, and just like, I'm cool with them, but like when they start like being touchy and like, it's never the girls that are like rude or touchy. It's like, it's the gay guys that will just like put their arm around you or try like they kiss you on the cheek. Okay, whatever. But then they try to keep kissing you on the cheek. I'm like, dude, stop. Like, I have no problem with being gay. No offense, but I'm not gay. Again, no offense. No worries. And the guy's like, he fucking like, he's like sitting there just like brewing in the story, like getting so pissed. And he like fucking slams his beer down on the fucking thing. He's like, I will put you 6 feet under the ground for saying something like that. And like Ben's trying to hold a straight face. Like everyone's trying to hold a straight face. This guy's like 60, you know, he wants to like kick my ass. And I'm a pretty like built guy, right? Like I think at my peak, I was probably like 240. Ben, how big have you gotten? When you were like your biggest...
I was 275.
Yeah, 270. Yeah. And you were like 4% body fat, I think, too. You were like fucking... You were shredded. And so he was a big 275. And Ben stands up behind me when this guy's like about to fucking hit me in the face. And he's like... What did you say? Do you remember the words?
So what's wrong with being gay, man?
Ben stands up. He's like, what's wrong with being gay? I like put my hand on his ass. He's like, oh, nothing, bro. Nothing. Dude, no, I'm totally cool with it. Like, about to get fucking Hulk smashed by fucking Ben Blevins over here. Thanks for the backup, by the way. So Ben's a bodybuilder. He's also an author. You've done a lot, man. You've been a medic in the military. You freaking ran a multi-gazillion dollar budget for a chain of hospitals, right? Did that happen? Or am I kind of making that up? Did I get that sort of?
Yeah. I was a hospital administrator. Yeah, so I was over 4 clinics and over a good bit of the financials.
Right on. And yeah, so he's a guy that there's not a lot of people that can track on multiple levels. And Ben's a guy that like, regardless of what's going on, whether it's like HR, whether it's entrepreneurship, bodybuilding, nutrition, getting in fights at random bars in Ohio. Didn't Misha Tate win the championship and we watched it at that bar? You remember that? When she was a Rev Labs athlete, you remember that situation? That was incredible.
We were hopping up and down, and I'm pretty sure you teared up a little bit.
And you know what? You also have said you will never say that publicly, motherfucker. He's like, yeah, speaking of like friends calling each other out, he's like, hey, dude, I'm really proud that like, you know, you're really close with Misha and like you've backed her as a, you know, an athlete and all this stuff, but we're in public and you're crying, motherfuckers. Quit being a bitch. Rub some dirt on it. No, you were supportive, but yeah, I did get a little bit emotional. I was just so so excited, and then when she started crying, I like fucking just like felt her, and it like got me a little bit, and I got emotional for her. It's kind of fucking cool, like being the champion of the UFC. I was just, she was having a moment, and I'm like, I don't know, I got overwhelmed, like just so fucking happy for. I knew how hard she had worked for it and stuff. You know, you wouldn't understand hard work, Ben. It's, I can teach it to you later if you'd like. Dude, speaking of hard work. I've never met a guy in my life, like my head gets up my ass sometimes, right? I start like taking my tasks personally. Like I start like intertwining how happy I am with how well I'm doing. And really they're two separate things. I've never met a guy that is so relentlessly motherfucking positive, like even through like quitting jobs, when you pull like the half baked scenario where you're like, or Jerry Maguire, where you're like, fuck you, you're cool, fuck you, I'm out. You know, you like grab the goldfish and leave. And I'm like, okay, well, you're pissed enough to fucking throw a smoke bomb and quit your like very, very well-paying job. How you doing? I'm good, man. I'm like, really? You're not pissed? You're not breaking anything? You're like, no, man, it's not, you know, it's not about what happens to you. It's what you do with it. Tell me a little bit how the fuck you hold that perspective so fucking relentlessly. Because, I mean, we talk through real life shit. I mean, like, you know, relationships and getting married and finances and you know, spirituality. And like, we really, Ben and I are good homies. He's a person that I'm just like, I'm really pissed. And it's either like, I'm going to go drive down to PB and get in a fight, or I'm going to like lift really hard, or I'm going to call Ben. So I'm like close enough to the trees to know that it's not an act and it's not a facade. How do you stay so fucking annoyingly positive all the time?
And there's a word that we use it loosely. It's called inspiration. And really what that root word is, inspire, means you're living in spirit. Now, again, that's more of a generic saying, but rather it really means when the Bible refers to spirit, or, you know, think of the word sorcerer. All that really means is you're using a source. That's, you know, it's not like witchcraft, or, you know, think of the word magic. All that means is manipulating an outcome, right? So all these words that are kind of strange, they're really practical in the sense of you know, when you think of spirit, I remember the psychologist, he described it like this. He says, you close your eyes and you think of the word rock star, like the drink, and you can see perfect image of the word rock star. And then you imagine the yellow star, and then you see that in your mind. That is the fourth dimension or spirit, which means creation, right? So if you're living in spirit or inspired, then all you got to do is really, you know, if you will, take the blindfolds off your future and say the best way to predict your future is to create it. And the only way to for sure create it is to stay in spirit and know, yes, that loosely I'm inspired. No, it's, I know for a fact that if I'm prepared enough, my outcome will come through. Now, easier said than done, because emotions really do get in the way, and it's almost impossible to avoid all emotions. But to take a step back from that, all it really takes is to stop saying I'm important and say, you know, that's why I was 25 and I was holding a high hospital administration job, because I would always approach any situation of what's best for us, you know, and whenever a situation arises, you know, if I can best diffuse my ego, I'm not arguing with anybody. You know, it takes two people to argue. You know, I'm actually arguing for them, for their purpose. And for the person that's maybe very ego driven or wants to argue, that blows their mind. You know, they're like, whoa, I didn't expect you to be so nice or smart or tactful about the situation. But I mean, it's easier said than done. But I think, you know, that's a daily goal of mine, to always stay that in spirit, you know, always thinking future tense of saying, okay, if I do this decently, then it might come true. But if I really do it, it's almost definitely going to have to come true.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And it's funny that you're talking about, like, I always get accused of like living in my head, you know? And my mom used to say, get out of your head. And I'm like, why? Is it a bad neighborhood? Like, teasing her when I was a kid. And she's like, no, Joshua, because you have two different kind unmatching shoes on your feet and we're now late for school again, you know? But for real, I mean, now that I'm an adult, I mean, I'm still absent-minded as all hell, but it's because like the reality that's occurring in my mind and in my, like the reality that I'm committed to is more fun than the reality that I'm living in. And the reality is, like, when you are connected enough to that vision, it's like exactly what you said, like a rock star energy drink or whatever the hell it is that you're seeing in your mind. Can you touch it? No. Can you taste it? No. But you can connect with it on some level. I like to call it like the fourth dimension. I think there's just different words for it. And I think I, by that definition of inspired, whether or not I'm feeling rah-rah all the time, most of which I am, regardless of whether or not that's my state of being, I think I have trained myself enough to not be able to live any other way besides committed to what I'm envisioning. You know, you're constantly, when you're doing that, you're grabbing a hold of your vision or your dream or your purpose or your imaginary thing that you're committed to manifesting by living in spirit and reality how it is now. And you're energetically pulling them together. And the people that can like see reality without being completely fucking delusional and still stay committed to what's in their mind's eye, whether that's harmony between people, whether that's like altruism, whether that's like getting rid of ego and self, or, you know, fucking bitches and making money, whatever it is, you're, to the extent to which you can remain committed to it and keep that dream and vision illuminated and very vivid in your mind, while also not just being a guy that's like walking down the street screaming random shit that isn't going on, is the extent to which you can like successfully manifest or create change or difference in your life.
That's it. You know, I think a really good definition, metaphorical definition of success, it's like, you know, it's focused, but even narrowed down again, it's like playing a guitar. And so if you're holding the guitar and your left hand holds the note, and that's your imagination, but your actual proactiveness at doing the task is striking the note. But even more guitar or piano, you have to ignore the other notes. You have to ignore all extreme focus. And then, you know, then you move your finger and you hit the next note. And then eventually you're playing a song. I mean, all that is, it's concentration. It's awareness. It's thinking things through, however you want to word it. Whatever, you know, the more intent that you have on a given subject, I mean, you name it. You know, if you didn't conquer a goal, you just weren't focused enough. You just, victory belongs in who believes in it the most. And it's, you know, that making an A all the way to being a billionaire, you know, how focused are you at X, Y, and Z that gets you to that goal?
Amen. So going back to the original question of how do you remain so annoyingly positive all the time? You're not doing it because you're talking about sunshine and rainbows. You're like in the dirt, right? You're like rolling up your fucking sleeves and getting down and dirty with it, talking about like, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with it. What was the story that you told me that one time? Was it two dudes you knew that like the story of the brothers? Do you remember that?
Yeah. So, you know, this was a true story. It was back in the 60s, and there were two twins that had an alcoholic father, and he was very abusive. And at the age of 17, both of them moved out. They got their own job. They said, I'm out of here. And then fast forward 30 years, and a psychologist was actually studying, you know, what is the outcome of, you know, these abusive homes, and, you know, really trying to see what it does to people in mentality-wise. So he interviewed both brothers separately. The first one was an alcoholic, had two divorces, just hated his life, very depressed. And the second one was a millionaire, had many successful businesses, loved life, was always giving to others. And so the psychologist was interviewing both of them, and he asked both of them the same question. He said, how is your life like it is? You know, what inspired you? What created your life? And both of them, just even though they were night and day differences, both of them had the same response. They said, well, what else would you expect with a father like mine? So it's just really blows your mind to think we've all played victim. I mean, I had a, you know, a dad that was kind of abusive, and it's always the victim mindset of, you know, oh, well, it's not my fault, it's this. And so I grew up like that. You know, I'm actually very fortunate that I went to the military at a young age and learned nobody's going to give you pity, and pity's not going to get you anywhere. You know, I mean, even if it's something really wasn't your fault, guess what? You have a choice to do something about it or not and move on. I mean, it's really tough to get people out of that mindset, but, you know, the opposite of that mindset is quite beautiful. It's saying, I don't care what happens to me. I know my destiny that I'm chasing. Might change it up here and there, but for the end result, I'm going to get there. Might take a year, might take 10, might take 20, but nothing's going to hold me back as long as I keep that focus.
Amen. Yeah. So another thing that I see distracts and deters a lot of people is the amount of free time they have. I know the story of I'm too busy, or when I get the time, I would like to blah, blah, blah. You have one of the most full plates out of anybody that I know. And it, especially at times when you're like, you know, prepping and you're eating like 7 pounds of chicken and going through like, you know, you just got your MBA, didn't you?
Yeah, I've got finished, went from my bachelor's to my MBA in 11 months while working 60 hours a week, while bodybuilding full time, while keeping my wife happy. So it's pretty, it was pretty testing.
Is that an oral sex reference, or do you mean emotionally happy?
I will not deny or confirm any response.
Yeah. You're giving me your deposition answer. I do not recall. Yeah, I remember you telling me the story. Like you had like fucking management classes that would go. First of all, congratulations on graduating. That's really dope that you finished. That was the fastest beginning of a bachelor's to a completion of a master's I think I've ever seen in my life. So yeah, needless to say, you have a fucking full plate, and at times you've had a psychotically full plate. Where like, you know, I'll pull it out and measure sizes with the best of them. You're kind of one of the dudes I would prefer to not do that with at various times, because like, you know how to stack your plate nice and full. And I'm not referring to, you know, you while you're bulking. Although I remember you telling me stories that you would leave your management class because they wouldn't allow you to have food in there. And you'd like go to the bathroom and like shovel 4 pounds of fucking chicken and then run back to your class while you were prepping. But what is a mindset that you hold or practices that you do? Or what do you think when, you know, someone says, I have a goal, but, and then one of their buts is the amount of free time that they have.
Yeah. So awareness, again, right back to awareness. You know, if let's put this in a very practical equation. If somebody works 40 or 50 hours a week, and let's say they sleep 8 hours a night, they still have 70 hours a week of free time. So in my book, you know, I go into some detail about this, but how funny is it that people, oh, I'm so busy and this and that. How about we rephrase this, right? If you have 70 hours of free time and going to school full time, even online, is about 10, 12 hours a week. So what if somebody told you, give me less than 20% of your free time. You can still do hours of Facebook a day like they like, and you can still watch hours of Netflix and Hulu, whatever, and you 20% of your free time, and you will be going to school full time and have a degree in a few years. You know, so when you step back and you look at, wow, you know, we don't realize how much time we're wasting. And it's really, I mean, it's a culture. You know, I heard Earl Nightingale, he was, you know, a great, you know, practical success philosopher back in the 50s and 60s. And one of the quotes that always stuck with me that really keeps me going, he says, the opposite of success is not failure, it's conformity, right? So if I'm blending in with the crowd, I'm not doing my deal. And I learned that before I heard the quote. I kind of learned it the hard way, because when I first started going to school full time, you know, I was right when I was about to get out of the military, and, you know, they offer you some, you know, really good perks to stay in. And so I really had a tough choice to make, but I said, you know what, whether I stay in or not, I'm going to get my degree before I get out, because I'm going to give myself opportunities and options. And as I started going to school full time, you know, it really wasn't that hard, but there were some, you know, Saturdays and Sundays I was taking over double full time classes. I was taking 12 semester hours every 8 weeks while working full time. So
the semester Noah was first born, Ben, I took 23 units and my wife took 21, and I did two of the classes for both of us with a brand new infant, because I was like, dude, we need to finish this up in like a semester and a half. Like, I'm not going to be that guy taking night school when I'm like 35, you know. I was like so close. I was like less than a year graduating. I'm like, fuck it, just give me as many units. We had to go to the dean to get it approved at San Diego State.
With that situation is a great example, but there are so many to say when you were doing, you know, X differently than somebody else. I remember so many friends like, hey, come on out on Saturday and do Sunday. And I remember, you know, it's not necessarily that they're mad at you. Know, nobody's mad at you. It's just they look at you differently and you don't really fit in with those crowds anymore. You know, it's, if you're successful, sadly, you just don't quite resonate with the old friends anymore. I remember Andy Frischella, is that his name?
Yeah, the owner of First Form.
Yeah, the owner of First Form. He put on his Instagram the other day, he says, when your life looks like you're bragging, when your real life looks like you're bragging to your old friends, that's when you know you've made it. And sadly, that's a super true statement of, if I tell somebody, right, I remember this. I remember posting when I got, you know, my associates in nursing on Facebook, and I had, you know, hundreds of likes, everybody, oh, that's awesome. And I remember posting my bachelor's and I got a few less likes, right? And then I posted, you know, about my master's. Nobody cares, right? They want to see you doing good, but they don't want to see
not
you
that
doing
good.
Better, you
know? Yeah. No, for sure. Bro, I'll tell you what, like, greatness sees greatness. And like, you see another guy just crushing it in the gym, regardless of how big he is, if he's working his ass off, I know for a fact you're the type of guy that's like, I see you, fuck yeah, bro. Or like, they walk by and you'd be like, dude, nice set, whatever, like, pound it. Most people are not great. And when they see a person producing greatness, unless it is directly and deliberately benefiting them, it's really tough for somebody that you are out producing to be happy for you. And when you're a person producing like a maniac, if you have a win, I find people are happy for you. If you have like 15 or 16 or 30 fucking wins, and they start to become more public because they're like very large wins, people are like, we get it, you're successful, shut the fuck up. Like, even with family, man, I found it was a very weird transitional period. Like, when you start crossing over to like a certain like date range and you're like passing your parents and you're passing your uncles and you're passing like what anybody has produced over whatever period of time, you almost have to be like, I'm like, let's take the less nice car to like the reunion. Let's like, you know, we stay off subjects. I'm like, how are you doing? And you're like, well, I don't want to tell you about the event I just spoke at. I don't really want to tell you about the Aspen trip I just took. I don't really like, I don't know, like, Noah's doing great in school. Like, let's stay on lighthearted subjects because you don't want to alienate yourself. But I found that I would consciously limit the amount that I was producing, and for sure the amount that I was communicating or like sharing with people. Because in the beginning, I would be excited and just talking about what I'm working my ass off on, people aren't happy for you, or they're socially happy for you, but truthfully annoyed or bothered by it. And I would limit my light. I would like dim it, right? I'd turn it down when I was not as comfortable with in my success in my like early and mid 20s. Cause I had the fortune of like my first entrepreneurial venture was pretty explosive, which I think was more lucky timing than like skill, to be perfectly honest. But even still, like, even before I was successful, when I was in college, like, you'd be fucking surprised how fast my friend's circle like disappeared when I'm like cruising to class and studying my fucking ass off and starting a business and literally taking a final with like a baby snuggie on like, you know, carrier on my chest, like, you know, holding the bottle to Noah's mouth on the way to class. They're like, they weren't like, wow, he's really on his path. Look how much he's juggling. Good for him. They're like, well, that guy got lame pretty quick. You know, and then once that started turning into like dollars and like success, people were like, oh, well, what are the chances he starts an insurance business? And then like however many months later, we have the biggest fires in San Diego history. He got lucky. It's like, yep, I got lucky. Cool. You know, when they see you doing it again and again and again and again, you know, if they're still one of the people hating, they're probably not somebody that even if they've never done anything to you, it's not really healthy to keep yourself around them because you'll have that, you know, before I embraced it, like, dude, I know for damn certain that I can't be all things to all people and I don't even try anymore. But there was definitely like a growth period or an adjustment period where I was still stuck in the mindset of like, don't make people feel uncomfortable. You know, keep the nice car parked in the garage depending on what fucking event you're going to. Like, rent a room that's not as nice so you can be in the same kind of room as everybody else. Because if they come into your room and you have like a 4-bedroom suite, it's going to be awkward. Now I don't give a fuck. But case in point, right? Like, I could give you a million of them. I agree 100%. Like, there is nothing wrong with outgrowing people. If somebody's growing on their path parallel to yours or in a different way, like, love and respect them. But, you know, there's some people that you just got to love and respect from a distance, because having them engaging it with your immediate psyche does nothing but suppresses how awesome you are, you know?
Yeah. And I've found probably one of the deepest side notes to success. I mean, there's so many tips and tricks you can give people, but, you know, this is complicated, even though it sounds simple. Is you treat people how you feel about yourself, you know? So when I hear, you know, whoever say, whether they didn't mean it to be negative, they were just speaking the truth, or maybe they are an asshole. It's like, what they say doesn't make who I am. You know, it's even deeper than that. It's like, there's something within them that they're dealing with to make them say that. Like, you know, we're not born to hate or to judge. I mean, that's all like taught traits. And it's really interesting. There have been many situations, whether it's in the gym, especially, you know, management situations where, you know, I'm dealing with another manager and somebody does. I mean, they attack you in whatever way. And when you respond with a sincereness, literally like, okay, man, you know, how can I help? You know, rather than, you know, arguing back or telling them off like you should, just like, you know, what do you mean by that? Or, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way. Why do you feel that way? And it really diffuses a lot of negativity, and they really do. Sadly, it took something like that to open their eyes, but, you know, people really do. People are swayed many different ways. They're more in the middle. Nobody's necessarily all evil. Most people like a stranger, really, right?
You've never met my ex-wife. Continue.
You just, like, you go to a grocery store anywhere, most people are going to respond to you how you respond to them, right? So if most people are mildly an asshole or mildly negative, well, mildly negative plus mildly negative equals pretty negative.
I think Justin Timberlake sang about it when he wrote the song Mirrors, you know?
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah.
A fucking mirror, 100%. You are seeing the things in yourself, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I use that psychological point of view to my advantage, not, you know, manipulating people, but like, you know what? Not
when I just quoted Justin Timberlake, by the way.
It's like, you know, whether maybe there's a manager that is an asshole, you know, I'll make sure. And the first thing I say to them is something super positive, you know, just to make sure that they're in a good mood. Or it works in so many different ways. You know, when my wife comes to me for a problem, maybe, you know, very realistically, it's a 50-50. It's not her fault. It's not my fault. Or maybe it's more her fault. You know, who knows? Maybe she tries to play off on me, or, you know, because she's mad at something. It doesn't matter. When I approach it of, you know, well, what can we do? How can we fix this? That really diffuses so much. And, you know, you approach that with problems in life, right? With, say, you know, you didn't get a good grade, or for my example, you know, I quit a job because of some really sketchy financial stuff going on. And, you know, my boss, we didn't get along good. I'm not pointing blame to anybody. You know, I use that situation. Okay, well, I'm definitely going to stay more communicative with this and that in the future. I'm going to keep an eye on financials a little better in the future, making sure nobody can bend things. I mean, look, I've learned from it. I've moved on. And I've honestly, it took me a minute, but I've sent her my fullest sincere blessing. That's that. No hard feelings.
You're clearly a walking 280-pound ball of resentment. I'm still pissed at like my third grade teacher for giving me a bad grade, even though my like handwriting was illegible and still is. You're better with the whole loving and forgiveness thing. Admittedly, it's something I've had to work on.
You know, there's an old African proverb and it says, if there's no enemy within, there can be no enemy without. And at first I heard that and I was like, yeah, okay. But no, it's really, look, when I really, you know, I'm in deep meditation a lot and I read a lot of, you know, books like Wayne Dyer and stuff. And it's just, when I really don't have an ego, it doesn't matter what situation arises or how bad people attack you. Look, there's no enemy within. I'm here to help. How can we fix this situation?
Ben, that's a beautiful point. I just did a podcast with a really, really badass marketing guy who I'm legitimately just going to be friends with from now on. Just a smart fucking dude, Travis Chambers. What's up, Travis, if you're listening? And, you know, he was saying, like, in the podcasting world, because he's a little bit of a public figure himself and got like the Forbes 30 Under 30 award and, you know, Google's most viral ad of the decade. And like, he has some notoriety and like notches in his belt for sure. And he's like, you know, with the whole podcasting or public figure thing, you can use it to come from a place of like true benevolence and a way to like give and to share, because that like suits your personality and is aligned with your vision for yourself and for the world. Or you can do it from a place of like sheer, you know, egoism, you know? And he's like, and I think you truly are a teacher and you just like helping people level up. You know, do you ever come from a place of ego? And I'm like, yeah, dude, 100% I do. I appreciate the comment and I do my best to connect with that. But really, and I said this point blank like two episodes ago, I think it's actually the last one that I posted on iTunes. Depending on how secure I'm feeling with myself depends on the place that I'm coming from, right? Because you book speaking engagements or you book like, you know, seminars or, you know, sessions of one kind or another, depending on how you're going to be feeling 40 minutes before that event. Do you know what I mean? You book it months and months in advance. And when I'm coming from a place where I'm not really feeling centered and comfortable, where I haven't like taken the time to like prep and take like the me time to like get my head right and like connect with my vision, and like, I can always tell, like, if I go on stage or before stage, if I'm going, I'm going to fucking crush this, it's probably going to come from a place of like more ego. I'm like married to what the outcome is, as opposed to if I like just close my eyes and I'm like, God, universe, Allah, Hashem, whoever the hell is listening to me right now, give me the strength and power and purpose to be as useful as I can be to my audience. However that looks, like, I'm not married to it. Just like, let me be a vessel. Let me be of service. Let me fucking crush it in your eyes and give them the skills, whether or not they enjoy it, to be able to better themselves, right? And I just set that intention. It's not a religious thing. It's not like what you put your attention on expands. It's not like a prayer or a belief in God. It's just like, let me get clear on what the fuck I'm here to do. And what I'm here to do is be of benefit and be of service, right? When I'm doing that, it does not matter what they like and what they don't like. And to that point, that gives me the type of security that isn't like the way that I appear to the outside world, which is like impervious to criticism and like fucking come at me, dude. Like, I will fucking handle anything. I chew up and spit out problems for a motherfucking living 18 hours a day. And I've done it for fucking 15 goddamn years. Try me. That's the way that like my demeanor with my communicative like ADD style comes across. But when I'm feeling powerful, whether or not that's my communication, the internal feeling isn't like I can fucking withstand or a tornado pitching balls to me. I can still fucking hit no matter how hard the wind is. I feel like power is something I don't rise up and embrace. It's something that I like chill back and settle into. It's more like being like the eye of the storm more than like amongst the chaos and like hitting baseballs out of a fucking tornado. It's not till like I connect with that eye of the storm feeling that I'm able to connect with like, what the fuck was I doing when I was like a part of the chaos trying to succeed at it? I don't think power is something that you like, you know, you see like the way Hitler would speak and it was very like manic, very like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? And I think that is creating, and obviously like Hitler is an easy example of like someone that's contributing to fucking like chaos and evil and whatever. But I'm just, there's like, I think like dictators a lot of the time have a very like hype way of communicating where they don't have like that settled peace behind the message that may or may not be powerfully moving people to one action or another. And I think the more you do not have that silent power, that internal sense of like being the eye of the storm, or like, I can't really explain the difference in feeling besides for just, it's not something I'm stepping up to. It's something I'm settling into. It's like a different point of operation. When I have that stillness, I don't give a fuck what people are saying, because my worth and my value and my opinion of myself and my commitment to my vision has nothing to fucking do with you. It has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with my value, and my value isn't something I'm willing to negotiate. It's not something I'm willing to acknowledge as negotiable with you or with anybody else besides for me. And when you come from that position, it's really hard to take offense to the offensive shit that people say.
You hit it with, you know, that the word maybe you're stepping back to, it's not limited to, but it's patience and humility. And by far, I try to live those ways. When you think about the word humility and people want to bend that and think, you know, I'm not putting myself down. No, humility isn't thinking of yourself less, it's thinking of others more. You know, so back when you were talking about giving the speech, you know, let me say what they need to hear, not what I want to say. Or, you know, as Les Brown says it, don't let what I want to say get in the way of what they need to hear. You know, it's so interesting. It's like all that is just like humility. That. Yeah.
Don't let what I want to say get in the way of what they need to hear. That's yeah. And I guess you're right. That's very different. Because like when I'm going out there, like I want to get this point across. I want to get this point across. It's very different than connecting with the energy of what do you as an audience need to take away from what's happening. And that's something you can just learn to feel and ask for feedback and do Q&A. Look, I know you have a funeral to get to, and I very, very, very much appreciate you taking the time to give to my audience and my listeners. I don't think this will be the last time you ever come on the show. I'd like you to read me the definition of empowerment, and then I'd like you to give me a practical application or an actionable thing that somebody can do to live a more empowered life.
So the definition of empowerment is authority or power given to someone to do something. Another definition is the process of becoming stronger, more confident, and especially in controlling somebody's life or claiming rights, you know, what's mine, what I'm entitled to. I think, again, empowerment, I'm going to give an unorthodox phrase, is going back to humility. You know, it's so strange to think, you know, back when you're talking about giving the speech, I can conquer anything when I just step back and take me out of it. What does, you know, whoever's on the other side of the argument or who's in the audience, what's best for them? You know, forget me. What, or even with my goals, it's even, you know, I don't have kids, but I do plan on them one day. And, you know, when I think of all this success that I'm carving and tailoring, I mean, I was raised very poor, which I'm thankful for everything I've had, but I'm going to give my child, right? So everything I'm doing, every goal I'm pursuing, that's in the back of my mind, right? If I fail, I didn't fail for me. I failed for, you know, you name it, my family, my kids. And who am I going to go back and say, well, you know, the world's tough, you better just hide. No, that's the speech I think I got from my dad of just, you know, unconsciously always painting the picture of, you know, don't try because you can't succeed. And it took me years of just of reading and self-understanding and really just spirituality to understand that the world is yours. The world, if you want to be a billionaire and you set your mind to it, it's inevitable. If you want to be a pro body, whatever your goal is, if you put enough concentration, enough focus, it is already reality.
So what is the actionable step that helps somebody to live a more empowered life on a day-to-day basis?
I have two for me. You know, definitely first and foremost, you have to have balance and time for yourself. You know, there's been days where I sleep, you know, I'm not going to sit here, oh, you got to get up at 5 a.m., you know, every day to be successful. No, I sleep sometimes till 10 or 11 a.m., but coincidentally, because maybe I got more rest, maybe I, for whatever reason, those are sometimes my most productive days, better than the days I get up at 5 or 6 a.m. So, you know, one would be don't get hung up on, you know, a nitty gritty process, you know, hold true to it, but it doesn't always have to be white and black. There are many gray areas in everything in life. You know, 1 hour a day, always set a time, whether it's morning, night, lunch hour. You know, when I was working 60 hours a week and going to school full time and bodybuilding, sometimes the only time that I had was like a 30, 40 minute break at lunch. But you best bet when I went to those breaks, it was 100% let me relax my mind. I would go to my car, I would eat my lunch, I would put on whatever audiobook I was listening to, and I would fully give in to the wisdom, the peace, whatever that book was teaching me. And I mean, people don't like to read or listen to audiobooks, but in my opinion, what better way to learn success than somebody that's already done it and they're giving you the easiest steps, the most practical ways to do it. In my mind, it's
Inside Out Empowerment Podcast. Sorry, my allergies are acting up.
It's a no-brainer, you know, and so I'll say that 1 hour of reading, you know, was it, I don't know if it's true or not, but they always say the average CEO reads 60 books a year. I mean, that's so fundamental. And in fact, I don't think you could get, even with a great mentor, I don't think you could be extremely successful in anything, not necessarily monetary, but with any goal without some kind of proactive daily intervention that you set for yourself. And the second, you know, kind of sub point to that is, you know, in my mind, you know, I know a lot of people aren't familiar with meditation, or that's kind of a loose word. They don't really know what it is. It's not, you know, some Buddha sitting in Indian style and holding their fingers out. Oh, you know, I can take 20 minutes or 10 minutes, or whatever time that I have. And all you got to do, it's this simple: sit there, breath, close your eyes, listen to your breath. Your mind starts wandering. Don't fight it. Just listen to that thought. Let it pass. Listen to your breath. Your thoughts get louder. Let your breath get louder. And somehow, some way, you know, including but not limited to, that increases your IQ. It helps you think so much more clear, makes you feel better, makes you really just emotionally just more happier. I mean, there's been so many hundreds, if not thousands, of scientific studies to say that meditation is just the cure-all for everything and anything. So read your books, and definitely, you know, you can go to YouTube and learn how to be a professional meditator in 10 minutes. You know, just all the little technical things.
If you guys want a dope resource for that, download the app Headspace. It's really, really cool. It's like so easy. I have a Headspace app for myself, and then I also have a Headspace app for Noah, for my 9-year-old kid. It will always stop you before you want to stop, which is the way that it should be. Meditating is not something that is supposed to be actively challenging and difficult. In fact, it's the opposite. It's like just being present and not trying, period, and letting go of like at the activity and the intention to like allow you to psychically and intellectually and emotionally recharge very, very briefly. You can accomplish the same of as like an 8-hour rest when you get trained enough in a very, very short period of time meditating. Take an hour a day to yourself for learning and recharging and meditation. Are those the takeaways you'd say, Ben?
Absolutely, man. And you know as well as I do, you know, we have these set goals, these daily things we have, and sometimes we drift away from them. And I can tell you so much, when my life is on course, is because I'm implementing these steps. And when my life is slowly, you know, almost you don't even notice, but it slowly drifts off to less production. And
drifting is the word. When it drift off course, if it was abrupt, we would just correct it.
Yeah.
We allow that shit to creep in until we're not being as efficient or effective as we otherwise could.
You may feel the same way, but I know for a fact when I feel that drifting, it's because I didn't give that 1 hour or just a sincere 30 minutes to that mind to body connection. We always get busy, but you have to find that time.
Dope. Ben, if people want more of you, how do they connect with you? I want you to plug your Instagram, the book, your email, however you want people to reach out and connect if you do want it. Your Facebook, full name. You have the next like minute and a half to tell people how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, my Instagram is Spartan_legacy. You know, I try to keep it with bodybuilding, but also I'd really try to keep it motivational encouragement. I do my personal training through that website too. And with my personal training, I'm also, that comes along with, you know, kind of some life coaching also. So I'm always there for my clients. You know, I have some that call me every day. You know, I'm very patient and I'm there for people because I know that.
Also very, very, very educated. He's pushed me through some really big plateaus. I think he got me up to like 240. With the lowest body fat I've ever had. I mean, he knows his shit. He sounds like a gentle, peaceful pro meditation guy. He's also a goddamn animal. I can put my name on this one for sure. If I have a question nutritionally or bodybuilding wise or supplement development or production, R&D, there's nothing you can ask Ben that he won't have a justified and researchable, verifiable opinion on. So utilize, if you have physical goals, and for that matter, emotional goals too, but fuck, for the physical part, for sure, get in touch and get in communication with Ben. Your life will be better for it. I promise. Benjamin, I very much appreciate you. How else can people get in touch with you besides for your Instagram? And what is your website, by the way? What is the URL?
It's teamspartanlegacy.com. It's on my Instagram. If you go to that, it'll have a link to it. And also, you know, my book, Your Undeniable Destiny, that's the name of the book, because just like what me and Josh talked about today, it's very practical, in your face, of good stories to reflect on, kind of like what we talked about with the brothers, you know, things like that, to really look at your life. And it's not judging anybody. It's just simply saying, you know, here's what you haven't been paying attention to. Here's what the world has taught you, and here's what successful people can teach you. And I just really take the approach of meeting anybody, on whether you're a beginner or an expert at a spiritual or educational level, whatever, whether you're about to conquer your goals or you don't even know what you want, it really gives you a great perspective of mental focus and knowing what you need to do in life.
Beautiful. Ben, thank you so much for fucking us up with some truth. I love you, buddy. We'll be in communication soon.
Bye, man. Thanks for having me on here.
You're welcome. Bye.
Inside Out Empowerment is written and produced by me, Joshua Nussbaum. But when it comes to all things editing, mixing, mastering, I have to give hats off. Resonate Recordings has been amazing to work with. If you have a podcast or you're thinking about starting a podcast, I knew I had a bunch of stuff I wanted to say, didn't really know how I was going to go about putting it into a podcast format, get it into an RSS feed, upload it to iTunes, all that stuff. And the owner of Resonate Recordings, Jacob, has really stepped up to the plate. Go ahead and mention Inside Out Empowerment when you talk to them, and you'll get your first episode mixed and mastered for free. If you guys are looking to level up your life and be entertained in the process, go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss my weekly podcast. I'm highly responsive. Please, I'm going to leave the show notes below, complete with all the ways you can connect with me on Instagram at RevLabsPrez, on YouTube at Joshua Nussbaum. This is here for you guys. Please reach out, connect, like, comment, subscribe, ask me questions, tag me. I'm here for you. Let's tailor this bad boy and live an empowered life. Talk soon. Just watch me now. Just watch me now.